Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. If you live in the northern half of the United States, you've probably heard about Lyme disease, a bacterial infection spread through the bite of a deer tick. Now there's even more reason to protect yourself against ticks. A dramatic increase in the tick population is expected this year because of the mild winter season, and tick-borne diseases are on the rise, including a particularly nasty viral illness called powassan.
A potentially fatal disease, powassan is not easily treated, and there is no vaccine. Your best bet in avoiding it and other tick-borne diseases is to take preventive steps to reduce your chance of tick exposure. Joining us to explain the emerging crop of tick-borne diseases and how to keep ticks at bay is Dr. Richard Osfeld, senior scientist at the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies, a not-for-profit research institution in Millbrook, New York, which examines the science behind environmental solutions. He's also adjunct professor at Rutgers University and the University of Connecticut, and has authored the book Lyme Disease, The Ecology of a Complex System.
Dr. Osfeld, we're glad you could join us on Take Care.
Thanks very much.
Tell us, what are the most common diseases transmitted by ticks in the United States?
By far the most common disease transmitted by the black-legged tick, also known as the deer tick, is Lyme disease. It's several times more prevalent than any of the other tick-borne diseases. But there are several others, and they are all on the rise in terms of number of cases in the U.S. The second most prevalent one right now probably is babesiosis, transmitted by the same black-legged tick. And this is a malaria-like illness caused by a protozoan. Then there is anaplasmosis, which is another bacterial disease similar to Lyme, but a very different bacterium from the Lyme bacterium. And then beyond that, there are a few fairly newly discovered bacterial pathogens that these same ticks transmit. There is Borrelia miyamotoi, which causes a disease crudely similar to Lyme disease. And then yet another Borrelia, that's the genus that the Lyme disease creature belongs to, Borrelia mayonii, which was recently discovered only in the past couple of years. The more we look inside ticks and people who get tick bites, the more of these pathogens and diseases we discover. And I expect that's likely to continue. And then, of course, there is powassan virus, as you mentioned, the one important viral disease transmitted by these black-legged ticks.
So where in the United States are the infected ticks found? And do some ticks carry some of those diseases you mentioned, and maybe they are more in the midsection of the country or the West Coast? Like, are the diseases specialized by region?
Well, the black-legged tick is found throughout really much of the eastern half of the United States and up into southeastern Canada. And there's its relative is the western black-legged tick, which is found out in California and a little bit in Oregon. So the distribution of the diseases, though, is more restricted. So even though there are plentiful black-legged ticks, for instance, in the southeastern U.S., there is not very much Lyme disease or these other tick-borne diseases. Most of these tick-borne diseases, Lyme, babesiosis, anaplasmosis, and powassan, tend to be found in the northeastern area between Maine and Virginia, extending out into western New York, western Pennsylvania, and then also in the upper Midwest, in Wisconsin and Minnesota. But now they're on the move there into Michigan and Illinois, and even over into the Dakotas. So, and Ohio is in the midst of it all, and it looks like they're getting squeezed from both sides. So these tick-borne diseases are on the move. They are increasing in their geographic range, but all of them seem to overlap in that sort of northeastern and upper Midwestern area.
Have you been able to determine why there is a rise in tick-borne diseases?
Well, there's a lot of interest in this, and there's some controversy about what the causes are. So we're experiencing two things when we talk about the rise in cases. One is the tendency for there to be more and more cases every year, And the other is the spreading geographic range of these ticks and the diseases that they transmit. And those might not be caused by exactly the same factors. So, but they overlap. So the diseases are spreading. The tick is spreading its geographic range. And we have a partial answer as to why. We know that as the climate warms, that the ticks tend to be able to occupy places that were formerly too harsh an environment, too cold or too short of a growing season for them to occupy, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. So that accounts for part of the movement to the north and up in elevation. But the ticks are also spreading, although more slowly, to the south, and that's not likely contributed to by a climate warming trend. So we don't really know what are the strongest contributors to that southward expansion in the Midwest and down into the Mid-Atlantic. The increase in actual numbers of cases is in part due to these expanding tick populations, but there are areas in which the ticks arrive, and then for maybe 5 or 10 years, they appear to get more and more abundant until they hit a sort of plateau. They never seem to go away. They arrive, they get more abundant, more dense, and then they just stick around at a fluctuating but still fairly high density. And as well, we do a better and better job of detecting actual cases. So some of that increase in number of cases is due to both increasing awareness by the patients, the people who get exposed, and also their healthcare providers. So the statistics are doing a better job of capturing the actual number of cases because we know we underreport true cases of tick-borne disease in the U.S.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lohan.
Our guest today is Dr. Richard Osfeld. He's a senior scientist at the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies. He's also the author of Lyme Disease, The Ecology of a Complex System. And we're talking about not only Lyme disease, but some of these other tick-borne diseases that seem to be increasing and also spreading geographically. And you mentioned that an educated patient, I'm paraphrasing, is really an important part of this puzzle, especially because whereas Lyme disease might unfold slowly and you have a chance to go to the doctor or get on antibiotics, the symptoms of this Powassan virus seem really alarming. And I think I would you agree that in your community, that is one of the most concerning things. So just quickly talk about those symptoms of Powassan and what your advice is to people that might think they were exposed.
Well, so most of these tick-borne diseases share in common a set of early symptoms and signs, and those are largely flu-like symptoms. This is true of Lyme, Babesia, Anaplasma, and even Powassan. So a fever, chills, muscle aches, lethargy, joint aches, you feel like a truck ran over you. And that tends to happen in May, June, or July. So it is not the flu season in the U.S. at that time of year. And if you're feeling those symptoms and you live in one of these tick-borne disease endemic zones that we've been talking about, then there is a reasonable possibility you have a tick-borne disease, and it's critical to seek medical attention right away. With Powassan virus, it causes encephalitis, swelling of the brain, and so there's often headache or other neurologic symptoms, partial paralysis, dizziness, disorientation are some of the other early symptoms. And you're right that Powassan virus is not easily treatable. You essentially treat the patient's symptoms, but there's little, if anything, that can be done to try to clear the infection, unlike the situation with a bacterial disease where antibiotics will often clear the infection. Powassan is a scary disease. You know, the bad news is that it can kill people. It does so in about more or less 10% of detected infections. And those who survive have about a 50-50 chance of having some long-term or even permanent disability. So it is not a disease you ever want to get. The good news is that it is quite rare. It's the rarest of all these different tick-borne diseases. There are only a handful of cases in the U.S. in any given year. And so the expectation that we're going to be exposed is really, really low. It's just that if you are exposed, it's a huge problem and something to be quite concerned about.
What is being done to educate primary care physicians and ER doctors about these tick-borne diseases, although it's rare, because action has to be taken, or is there any action taken with Powassan? Are these first responders, like in the ER and primary care doctors, aware that this is even something they should test for when a patient presents with these symptoms?
I actually don't know the answer to that question. I know that there are lots and lots of symposia and scientific meetings. They're organized by scientific societies as well as by various Lyme disease organizations. They bring in experts. They set up symposia, usually regionally, to bring in healthcare providers to be educated about the recent research. I don't know to what degree this is translated directly into emergency room practitioners or intensive care doctors. That this is not an area of my expertise. There is an explosion of information on tick-borne diseases in terms of diagnostic tools and treatment options, and there's a very rapid rate of new information. Some of it turns into blind alleys. This is often true in science, but some of it turns into lasting remedies or at least allies in the fight against these diseases. So it's important for the healthcare provider community to keep up on the latest research. I don't know how easy it is for them to do so, though, at this point in this rapidly developing field.
We've been told repeatedly ways to keep ticks away, and that includes long-sleeve clothing, making sure you tuck your pants into socks, into sturdy shoes or hiking boots. And I know more and more people are talking about spray repellents. What does a repellent need to keep away ticks?
Well, so there are a couple of different categories of repellent. There are types that you use on your skin, so these would be your DEET-based repellents, or there's Picaridin. There are a few other repellents that are shown to be at least moderately effective and are regulated and approved by EPA processes, and I think that's important because that's a level of vetting that you often don't get in some of the herbal remedies. Then they work moderately well. They do repel some ticks, but they're not perfect. Then there's the other class are permethrin-based repellents, and they do have repellent properties, but probably more importantly, they actually kill ticks. And these are products that you spray on your clothing, or you can buy clothing that are pre-treated. There are a number of different outlets that sell these products. And the treatment, this permethrin treatment, lasts through quite a number of washings. So you might only need to treat clothing a couple times during a tick season, and it'll last through a dozen or even several dozen washings. Those seem to work even better. So what I often recommend is that people make sure that they treat their shoes and socks. Many of the pre-treated clothing are pants or their shirts, and that's great. But the nymph stage of the black-legged tick, which is the stage that transmits most cases, the strong majority of cases of all these tick-borne diseases, they are hanging around looking for a host on the ground or in very low vegetation, a couple inches off the ground. So the place you're likely to confront that tick that might make you sick is around your feet and ankles. So your first line of defense should be to spray shoes and socks with those permethrin-based repellents and tick killers. That's often neglected, and I think if we use that strategy more often, we would probably be better at protecting our health.
Dr. Richard Ostfeld is senior scientist at the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. He's also adjunct professor at Rutgers University and the University of Connecticut and has authored the book Lyme Disease, The Ecology of a Complex System. Thank you for giving us your insights into tick-borne diseases and what we can do to keep ourselves safe. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.